Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. All right, welcome back to the show. Today is episode 600. Oh, I hit the 600 mark. Yay! And I have my new friend, Kristen Tripolitis here. Hi, Kristen.
Hey, how are you?
I am great. Kristen is a New York City-based actor, singer, VO artist, former nanny, and child digital safety advocate. After almost two decades of working with families professionally and witnessing firsthand the impacts of technology on children, and after being displaced during COVID, Kristen decided to lean into digital safety advocacy by becoming a family online safety specialist for an app that works to help families keep their kids safe online. Now, Kristen consults independently on digital safety, actively speaks on Clubhouse, where I think we met.
Yeah.
As well as podcasts like this one and for families looking for solutions. Welcome, Kristen.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here and to have this conversation.
Yes, so our conversation is going to be about keeping kids safe online.
Yes, yeah, which is a complicated and ever-changing thing.
That is probably the understatement of the year and exactly accurate.
yeah, especially particularly this year. With the transition from in-person learning to Zoom classrooms.
Oh, 100%. This has been a year like no other, hasn't it?
Yeah, across the board.
Yes. Kids have been forced to be online more to whatever degree their school education required. They probably, most of them were already online more than their parents were comfortable with. And then the pandemic just pushed that right through the roof. And I know that it's left parents worried, nervous, fearful. Mm-hmm. And I always try in my work and especially on this podcast to empower parents, to equip them with knowledge and info and resources so that they don't have to feel as worried, fearful, and scared.
Yeah. I think everyone has to give themselves a lot of grace and try to push aside the feelings of shame. Everyone is where they are in their journey with learning how to adapt with this ever-changing world of new apps and new platforms and new parental control restrictions. I mean, it's tons of information. It's a full-time job. Yes. So I think first and foremost, it's like, start where you are, one step at a time. Don't overwhelm yourself, you know, because at the end of the day, we got to get through each day.
Amen to that, right?
Right. I mean, I'm like, let's just start there. We got a lot of this for a lot of people this year has been survival mode, you know?
Yes. But now as we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, which you and I were talking about before we hit record, and things are starting to look somewhat familiar to the way we used to live. Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully we have a little more, we can take a deep breath and we have a little more bandwidth to maybe start to put some things into place that will keep our kids safe and keep us feeling a little less alarmed and scared.
What I would love to have a window in on is how is the transition from now that all children have sort of adapted to socializing largely digitally during this time. That's their main source of social interaction. How are we transitioning them back into in-person socialization? And how are we sort of, you know, honoring the potential anxieties and challenges with relearning and re-entering into face-to-face socialization at an age where a lot of these kids are just learning how to do it for the first time anyway? Mm-hmm. You know, so how are we supporting kids in getting back to that and setting boundaries in terms of their online presence and their in-person presence? I would love to hear from parents about how that transition is going, because I imagine what a lot of people are facing right now.
That is very true. That is a definite issue. Mm-hmm. I can speak from my own experience with my kids. My younger son was perfectly happy to be in remote schooling for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. It did not negatively impact him. He stayed connected with his friends through the pandemic a lot online with video games, but then also at times being outside. He and my husband and his friends and their dads have discovered a love of frisbee golf. So yeah. They've played a heck of a lot of frisbee golf over the past half year, because it's an activity that gets them outside. Being outside is a little safer in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he was getting his need for his natural human need for connection very well with his friends.
That's awesome.
And he seemed to be able to concentrate on the Zoom or Google Classroom meetings, which is something that most kids, I think, struggled with, that concentration factor. But mm-hmm. he's fine. When his school announced that they would be going back to in person, they were 2 days a week for most of the year, but then they went back to 5 days a week. And he was not happy about it. I mean, he didn't really care, but he would have been happy to sit on the couch with the computer on his lap for the rest of the school year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for him, it wasn't such a big deal. But my daughter struggles with anxiety. She's in high school. So going through the remote schooling part of the pandemic was actually easy for her in a way, because it kept her more in her comfort zone, where she didn't have to interact socially. She didn't have to worry about her outfit or what are the people thinking of me, none of that stuff. So it was easier in that way. But then the going back, it required more momentum. You know, she couldn't just snap her fingers and go back. We had to think about it and talk about it and prepare for it and get ready for it. And, I'm happy to report and thankful to report that it's been really good for her, because she even said this to me, that she recognizes that going back to in-person school, while it made her nervous to think about it and get ready for it, she recognizes that it's been good for her because it's pushing her out of her comfort zone. And she thinks that having the break of being forced to be home in her comfortable space, that break actually gave her some renewed energy to be back out in the world again.
Wow.
And she feels like she's firing on all cylinders. So it's kind of...
That's amazing.
It's totally amazing. I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. You know, I have a family that I've been connected to in the realm of, you know, personal assisting and childcare and stuff for a number of years. They have a daughter and she's, you know, 15, 16 years old, and had a similar experience where being home allowed her to recharge, allowed her to focus more academically, which gave her a sense of confidence that she had been lacking before. And, you know, the academic side of being a teenager and the social and emotional side both carry a lot of weight. And I think something had to give, and being home allowed her to have space. And she's been thriving, which is really interesting. And then you think about adults as well, leaving office environments, working from home, reevaluating the joy and the fulfillment that they're getting from their work.
Yes.
And It's been a really rough year in a lot of ways, but there also have been a lot of silver linings, like I think what we're talking about right now.
100%.
Yeah.
And lots of transitions.
Yeah.
Lots of transitions. And like you said, going back to maybe your company's going back into the office, and it might be hard to say goodbye to some of the silver linings that you got when you were stuck at home.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a lot to be on in person for a whole day when you haven't done that in a while, to get dressed and be showing face and being out there and in the world and having to make eye contact and, you know, make sure you don't have crumbs on your face and like little things that you don't think about, you know, like little details that I remember just being like, this is a sensory overload for like a week. And then I was like, okay. And I imagine kids are probably going through the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And it, particularly so for sensitive people, sensory overload.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's important for parents to remember as their kids are adjusting back to that in-person schooling, if they've not been in it the whole time, to be aware that there may be a bit of sensory overload.
Yeah.
Interaction overload, social overload, all of it.
Yeah. I also heard that like there are a lot of classrooms where teachers are, they have a few students in person, but they also have Zoom open and they're teaching both to a classroom and to Zoom. And that's probably difficult for all three of those parties involved in that moment. Yeah. I look at teachers and I just think of them as like rock stars. I'm like, I don't even have kids. I'm just indebted to you. Like, you know, that's how I feel.
They're so amazing. And the way they've been able to just shift and be flexible back and forth all over the place with no idea of how this was going to pan out or work.
Yeah.
Teachers are amazing.
Yeah, I think too, like one of the things that is really challenging about the digital space is that apps, platforms, and parental controls are constantly changing and evolving, and it requires a ton of attention and detail. Just to shift to this topic a little bit more specifically, I think starting with getting yourself educated on what the platform is, what it does, and why kids are using it and how kids are using it is the first step to take before knowing how to then pare it down, put controls on, empower yourself to have your, you know, set boundaries for your kids. Like the education component, to me is just like step one of the game.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more.
Yeah. There's a great website. It's called Common Sense Media, commonsensemedia.org. It's amazing. 'Cause you can see like ratings that parents give, like this is for this age, and ratings that kids give. So you can really understand the perspective across the board is giving both parties a voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how it should be at home too. Parents have their voice about it. Kids have their voice. They come together. They have an open conversation about it and they can meet somewhere in the middle where everyone kind of gets a little something out of it. You know,
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm always trying to talk to parents about. Give your kids a say, but don't give them full reign of everything.
Yeah.
But don't also keep full reign of everything, because then they don't have a say and then conflict arises.
Yeah. And I think sometimes if there's a lack of education, and not in a negative or judgmental way, but if you just don't know the platform, you don't know what it does, it's easy to just be like, nope.
Yes.
You know? And I think
you're not doing that. Yeah.
Right. And then I think that's based in fear, and that's the like all or nothing moment. Whereas I feel like if you teach yourself about it and you learn about it, then you don't have to be like, no, I'm too worried about that. You're absolutely not on that. You can say, hey, yeah. And this is the structure that we're going to have so that you are safely doing this. And that I'm, you know, like empowered by having information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
One of the things that my husband came up with when my now college son was getting onto social media when he was younger.
Yeah.
E stands for evidence, ooh, eternal, and electronic.
Okay.
And he came up with it on the spot. And I was kind of like, wow, tell me more about that. So electronic, obviously, you're using a device. Evidence, what you say can and will be held against you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it will be there eternally. So yeah. When Snapchat says the thing disappears after a certain amount of time, you don't necessarily know that it's disappearing. Mm-hmm. It's technically disappearing, but what if they took a screenshot? And then I know that Snapchat, if you take a screenshot of someone's Snap, then it sends them a notice that you took a screenshot of them, mm-hmm. of their whatever, their Snap. But what if they have another phone, and they take a picture of it on their phone? So you don't even know they took a picture of it. You know, there's like so many different ways that it actually can be eternally there.
Yeah. I mean, we function so hugely in the digital space that I remember something that sort of developed as a phrase I used along the way is helping your child develop their digital etiquette. I remember when I was my mom used to make me call and order the pizza. And I was beside myself to have to pick up the phone and dial a number and ask and go through with the whole thing. Just nerves and anxiety and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
You know, my mom never let me put the hairbrush on the table, or, you know, my grandmother always used to make me put please at a certain point in the sentence. I don't do that anymore. But I guess my point is that now that we function just as much digitally, if not more, than we do in person, the same way we teach manners and respect in the real world, we now have to also teach that digitally. So helping your child to build an etiquette online.
Yes.
To understand
digital
etiquette. Yeah. Digital etiquette. I really latched on to that because
phrase.
Yeah. The phrase is good. And it just, for me, it's like, we all know what etiquette means. When you hear etiquette, like, you probably have visions of like a girl with book on her head and, you know, have a good posture or the whatever, you know, please and thank yous. It's like, okay, wow. The internet and the digital space is not this unedited, free, reckless, abandoned place to post your true and intimate, you know, there are ways to have privacy online, but, nothing is private.
No.
Yeah.
And there's a way to make it unprivate, and somebody knows how to do it.
And just the same as it's like, you know, when kids are young, you're teaching them to say please and thank you after they're asking for things or receiving things. It's like, that doesn't mean that every time or moment in the future, hey, can you grab that for me? They're not using please and thank you all the time, but they understand the baseline etiquette of interactions. And I think that that's really important during the, you know, formidable years for kids to teach digital etiquette. And then they will grow and learn in their maturity and their understanding of how things work and how the working world and bosses and yada, yada, and all the things that, you know, could be influenced by your online presence and your activity online.
Yeah. And I think digital etiquette, I'm thinking it encompasses a couple of things. It encompasses how we conduct ourselves online, on social and stuff like that. And also how we conduct ourselves in person with our phone in or not in our hands.
Great point.
When it's appropriate to use it, turn it off, put it away, put it down. When it's fine to use it.
What you get from that?
Yeah. All of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think also it's important to for us parents to role model what digital etiquette looks like. Mm-hmm. When are we looking at our phones? When are we checking them? When are we picking them up? Are we making eye contact with our kids when we see them after a school day or a work day? Mm. Or are our eyes stuck on our phones and we're not even connecting human to human when we see them?
And if we're modeling, you know, etiquette in the real world, face-to-face, socially, we should also be modeling the digital etiquette just the same.
Exactly.
For sure.
Those are really good points.
Yeah. The hard thing is too, I think like parents and caregivers are not isolated from how this year has impacted them as adults.
Correct.
Right? Like,
yep.
And I think that that's actually a common ground that you have with your child or the kids in your life. So if you can kind of empathize with each other on that and say, hey, we're all going through this, then it's like a team mentality versus I'm telling you how it's going to be mentality. And I think one is a lot healthier than the other.
And it's a lot more invitational. It's a lot more,
right.
You're a lot more likely to get some interaction and willingness on the part of your child if you're expressing that it's hard for you too, and you have to work at it just like they have to work at it.
Here's something interesting. When I was growing up, one of the parenting tools that my family used is that you have a last name that we all share, and that means that what you do represents the family.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and there are certain like kind of weird manipulative things about that as well that I think could be negative, but I think largely it made me feel like what I do reflects positively or negatively on the people who share the same name as me. And I think there's something that is transferable and useful in a conversation with your kids about their activity online. That you are, you know, representing our family, or you're representing this name, and what you do impacts the people around you how they move through the world. I think there's something interesting there as well.
Yeah. As long as you don't, parents have to be aware of the intention behind that message, because like you said, the intention could be a controlling one.
Yeah.
But it could also be an encouraging one. Let's think about how we conduct ourselves, because we are representing, you're representing yourself, you're representing our family.
Yeah.
And these, you know, these are our values, and, you know,
yeah,
are you making choices that are in alignment with the things that we feel strongly about?
Yeah. One thing that I really like is the idea of a family device. So I know a lot of families purchase devices for their kids, and they have individual iPads or individual phones, and similar to how people like could possibly purchase their child a car or something like that. But I sort of think that there's like a healthy idea in having a family device and naming the device the X family device, so that even if like in reality it is your child's device, just by naming it as a family device, just with the idea and the thought process that this isn't this thing that I own and I can keep in my room and it's private and it belongs to me. It's like the family's paying for it and paying for the service. It's a family device. You have access to it. And at some point in your life, you can purchase and pay for and invest in a personal device, but it's a family device. I think a lot of times, like, there's sort of a danger zone in terms of setting boundaries and parental controls and restrictions on a phone that a child feels belongs to them and is theirs. Mm-hmm. And so I think that can sometimes cause disagreements and
battles.
I've heard parents a lot of times say, well, I can't take the phone. My kid's going to freak out. Or you don't know how hard it is for me to take my kid's phone for an hour, for 2 hours. It's like an appendage. It's like, yeah. Who's paying for the phone? Mm-hmm. I get that it's a battle, but I think to myself, if we set the tone of it being a family device from the get-go, then you may have an easier time down the line in saying, okay, no, you know what I mean? Like the rules come from here because it's our device and we're sharing it with you with the family. And I think there could be something helpful there.
Yeah, I really like that. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I love that. I actually just wrote it down because I think it's so cool.
Oh, well, cool. Yeah. I know it's hard, you know, because like kids are going to activities and you've got multiple kids, but I don't know. I think that even if the devices do function as their own, just by simply having it be named a family device and have that be the intention, or have a family charging station in the kitchen where the devices go at night, little things like that, you can set the tone to, if you're concerned about like your child staying up and being on the phone all night, for example, or having those battles of needing the phone to update it or to put parental controls on it or to monitor the device, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's all really about the intentions.
Yeah.
Right. And, is the structure that you're creating, have you created a structure around device use, and is that structure in alignment with your value, with your family values?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of folks who have kids that are in like the four, five, six range largely feel like, you know, my kid's on an iPad, they're on YouTube Kids, they're watching very innocent videos. And it's like, you know, definitely way before our time that we need to be concerned about things like, you know, pornography or the dark web or chat rooms and things like that. But I definitely would encourage parents to start as early as possible, because if alongside device use, there's a understanding and an expectation set that alongside using a device also comes monitoring, then as the kids grow a bit older and as that could be something that feels a bit more invasive, you know, if the parent is coming in with that at 10 or 11 versus if they're starting the device with that, then that's sort of always how it's been.
Right. I remember when my kids when they first got devices, we had to know the password.
Right.
And, you know, it was just a known thing. We're allowing you to have a phone now because we think that you are mature enough to handle it, responsible enough to handle it. And along with that privilege comes a responsibility and an understanding that we will have the password to it. It is not your device. We own it. We pay for it. We're giving it to you to use, and we will monitor it. We'll have the password to the phone and anything that's in it so that we can access it whenever we want. And we will access it from time to time. And for us, when we gave each of our kids a phone for the first time, we started by checking it every day. And then we said, you know, this is what we're going to do. And as we see that you're conducting yourself well, E is electronic, eternal, and evidence. As we see that you're making good choices, and part of those good choices, one of the things that we said is when you send a message or post something or write something, ask yourself before you hit send or post or whatever it is, would I be okay if my grandmother read this? My mom read it. My principal read it. My teacher read it. The person I'm writing it about read it. And would I be comfortable having a conversation face to face with that, with any of those people about this thing I'm about to send? And if you can say yes to all of those things, then it's probably okay for you to put that out there. If you have to, if you find yourself saying no to any of them, you probably shouldn't. What you just wrote out there, or the picture, or whatever, the video, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so getting back to the password, we said, we're going to be checking this every day. As we see that you're posting appropriate things, then we'll drop down maybe twice a week, maybe once a week. And then maybe as we develop more and more trust and you're showing more and more responsibility and maturity and good decision-making, then maybe it'll be once a month and it'll just be here and there.
Yeah.
And then eventually you'll graduate, you'll be old enough that we won't check it anymore. And that'll be your launching into either adulthood or close to adulthood and full privacy. But privacy only comes once you earn it. And we see that we can trust you to make good decisions.
That sounds really healthy and really sound. I think the hard thing is that for a lot of people, like the idea of monitoring or parental controls is sort of like reactive. It's like we found ourselves in a situation and now we need to figure out how to how to handle that, how to protect our kids. And it can be really traumatic and
very intense
and very intense. And unfortunately, like tech companies and social media platforms are a little behind in protecting kids. I mean, you know, in the past, if you turned the television on after 8 p.m., you sort of knew like that was inappropriate content that kids aren't supposed to see. Now we've got like streaming services and platforms and apps, like they call it the Wild West.
The gates are wide open.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think like it's really hard when there's been sort of a precedent already set of sort of like freedom and full access to then pare down and pull back. And I think for kids, it can feel super invasive. It can feel like someone reading your diary. I mean, I don't know if like I'm a person who journals. I don't want anyone opening that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it probably feels like that to a lot of kids. And that's
definitely
that also stinks for them. Like they need a place to be able to express themselves and have privacy in some ways. And I also think like places like YouTube have a lot of really terrible and inappropriate content, but there's also really awesome things on YouTube.
Yes.
You know, there are great things about learning a dance routine and posting something on TikTok. There's also really damaging content. And so it's like, it's just, I think like objectively, it's just unfortunate that these platforms have developed such popularity without any kind of, you know, censorship in any way.
Consideration to given to
yeah.
It's safe.
Yeah. And that's, it's hard. It's hard once you've, you know, found yourself in a situation and you need to figure out how to move forward in a way that's safe, particularly like we were talking about, like for kids whose only social interaction or who have an easier time interacting digitally. Like if you take away a device, you might be taking away things that are really harmful, and you may also be taking away things that are, you know, it was a saving grace for that kid. So
yeah, vital lifeline of connection sure, to their friends.
Sure. Sure.
It's so complicated. It's just can make a person's head spin when you think about it.
It's very complex.
I think it's also important for parents to keep the lines of communication open, and specifically about devices and being online and social media, but more generally, just in general, this is why it's important to keep the lines of communication open in all areas in your relationship with your kids. But
yeah,
letting them know that there are things out there that they might stumble across that are, they're not ready for, too mature, too scary, mm-hmm. and to encourage them as the parent to come to you if you stumble upon something that's confusing, upsetting, scary, traumatizing, you know you're not ready for this. Come to me and let's talk about it and let's figure out how you've stumbled upon it, how we can keep you safe from that in the future. Do you have any questions about what you stumbled upon?
For sure.
How can I help you to feel less upset about it or scared about it or whatever?
And that's definitely something like, okay, so your child, your 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old child, you find is watching pornography online. It's like, don't, in my mind, it's like, don't beat yourself up for that. And also don't put blame on your child. Like come together and just accept that this is happening. Take the narrative back, find a way that you feel comfortable talking about sex and anatomy in a way that is biological and informative and teaches them a healthy way about viewing their body, other people's bodies, setting boundaries, a healthy rhetoric surrounding intimacy. Because if the place they're learning that is online, I would say like, just take the narrative back. If you're not talking about it and you're just shutting it off, that doesn't mean the kid's all of a sudden going to lose interest, you know? And that's the other thing. Right. It's like a 5 or 6-year-old child who has access to the internet, they're online schooling, they open up a browser and they type in something they think they're interested in, you know, and they get search results.
That may not be what they were looking for.
It doesn't mean that they're like, ooh, I need to find this.
Right.
It might be, but in either case, solving the problem and in a sense of like, educating your child and helping your child have a healthy relationship with the internet, with their own sexuality, shutting something off and not talking about it is, I think, probably could potentially be the most damaging course of action in that scenario.
Yeah, it's so not good.
Yeah. Like, and you know, no one is the villain. We don't need to vilify anything. Like, I think, yeah, having a healthy conversation about that is the other thing is a lot of, I encounter a lot of parents who say, okay, you know, I'm not happy with the way my child is interacting with this app, so I need to just get rid of the app.
Yeah.
maybe it works for some families, but I think there's a middle ground. There's the way to say, here's why this is bad. Here's maybe you're showing us that you're not emotionally or developmentally ready to use this app. So we're going to put this app on a parent phone, and you're going to have an hour of supervised time on it in a supervised room of the house. And then we're going to build trust back up.
Trust. There's that word again, right?
Yeah.
I'm in a bunch of Facebook groups. I've seen so many posts from parents who are struggling because their child did or came across something inappropriate on an app, mm-hmm. and they made their kid get rid of it, or they took mm-hmm. it off the phone. Mm-hmm. And now they've discovered the kid either put it back on their phone, or they were accessing it online on the computer or some other mm-hmm. way, or they were looking at it on a friend's device or something mm-hmm. like that. So that idea that you're just going to delete it because you're not comfortable or they're not doing the right thing, it's not getting you anywhere, and it's not helping them, because they're going to find, can find ways around it if they want to.
Yeah.
So I think really that idea about, okay, in order for you to work your way back to it, we have to build trust again. So for right now, mm-hmm. I'll let you have it for 1 hour a day mm-hmm. in this room with me sitting next to you until I feel more comfortable and I feel like I can trust you more.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying, like, you know, this idea that you have a family divide, like, my kid's staying up till 2 a.m. on their phone in their room.
Mm-hmm.
And then my sort of question that I ask myself is, why is the phone in the room at night as an alarm? Totally get that. Mm-hmm. There are other ways to have alarms mm-hmm. other than phones.
Mm-hmm.
And like, when I think about survival, like as humans, I think of like sleep is one of the most essential things that we need to function socially, academically, you name it. We got to get sleep. Mm-hmm. If we don't have sleep, it's like, how are we functioning throughout the day? Our bodies need to heal and need to re-energize. That's like one of the things that I think is my biggest concern, is like, how do we get phones out of rooms at night? How do we make sure that people are getting sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Forget like, you know, the negative effects of the light from the phone or what have you, all those other things. How do we ensure first and foremost, like baseline survival needs are met?
Yeah, because that is important.
Yeah.
I mean, sleep is the foundation upon which everything else is built.
Yeah.
If your sleep is messed up,
yeah,
you're not going to be happy. You're not going to be able to concentrate.
Totally.
Maybe you're not going to be healthy. Like, something is going to go, one or more things is not going to go your way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like we were saying before, like this idea that there's a charging station at night. And I think like caregivers can set the tone by putting their phones there too.
Yes.
Right? Because it's like, we're all in on this. There's like a camaraderie and a community involved, where if it's just like, oh, you know, you did something wrong, you're not allowed to do this, and this is what's happening. I think like that, one of those is inviting, one of those is like, feels like a punishment.
Yes.
Maybe it is a punishment, but it doesn't necessarily need to be showcased that way. You know,
yes.
I think there are ways that you can kind of, yeah.
So really what I think the tone of the theme of our conversation today is really circling around is that it's not a one size fits all solution to keeping our kids safe online. Signing up for an app is one piece of the puzzle, and it's something that can help keep your kids safe online, but you can't sign up for an app and then just hit the snooze button for yourself and think, okay, I've got this app now and it's doing my job, because an app can't do the job of parenting. But it can certainly be a tool that a parent uses.
Yeah, it's a partner. It's a piece of the puzzle. Exactly. Because at the end of the day, like, you've got certain kids who are coding, and they understand at a very deep level.
Yes.
And they're gonna have a better understanding of it than you do. That's okay. That's okay. But you also have to remember that, like, by slapping a monitoring platform on a phone, you're not solving. Right. Right. Exactly. And so I think it's like, it can be a tool. It can be helpful. And there are some incredible platforms out there, and there are built-in features to phones in themselves. And then there are platforms that you can add on alongside
which
that.
Which are really great platforms.
Amazing. But they're not, if your kid wants to get around something at night to be on social media and they're super tech savvy, they're probably going to find a way. That's right. Why I say then take the power back, find a way to empower yourself as the owner of the phone and as the adult and the caregiver to say, I'm going to set the boundary here.
So really it's about building trust, having open communication with your child, and creating healthy boundaries, role modeling, good digital etiquette to bring that back. I love it. I think all of these things are so, so important.
Yeah.
So I think that kids, I hope that parents, after listening to our conversation today, will feel empowered, less worried. They'll know the elements of what it really does take to keep their child safe online. And if they're not already utilizing these tools and these things that we talked about, that they'll really figure out ways to incorporate them into their relationship with their child so that they can help them grow into a good, responsible digital citizen.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's the most sad to me is when it becomes such a wrench that you're no longer able to sort of enjoy your relationship with your child and or to lean into their digital world. Get on, if your child's on TikTok and you're comfortable with that, get on TikTok and do a dance video. Learn it. Put TikTok on your phone. You can be a silent lurker on these apps and just figure out what it's about. What's the culture?
Yes.
You can have a dialogue with your kid where they're not rolling their eyes saying, you have no idea what you're talking about. You can actually get into their world a little bit, just like you get down on the floor and you play with a kid when they're little, lean into it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And our kids are, the vast majority of them, like you said, are going to be way more tech savvy than us. And they can probably help us with stuff. And
for
entering their world and showing interest in what they're doing and what they're learning about, that's part of building the trust, because it's building the connection and the relationship between you. And that is a fabulous idea.
Yeah. Thank you so much for asking me to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on, because I think this was a really fun conversation. And I think we covered, I'm scribbling notes furiously. I think we covered a lot of really important points that will be of great value to parents and to their children.
Yeah.
So awesome. If anyone wants to connect with you to ask you more or just find out how they can keep their kids safer, how can they find you?
Well, I'm on Instagram. My handle is @ktripp. But you can always send me an email. I don't know if it'll have my first name on here, but it's basically my first name dot my last name @gmail.com is my email address.
I'll put all that in the show notes.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, anyone feel free to reach out to me. I consult for various number of families. Everyone is where they are in their digital journey. And, I'm here to help people educate themselves and come up with tools and sort of a game plan for how to, grow that digital etiquette and help them through, pre-adolescent through, 17, 18 years old, when all of a sudden you're an adult.
Yep.
All of a sudden you got free reign and access. So.
And we want to try to get a handle on this before then.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely. And the good and the hopeful thing is that I think a lot of these different tech companies are starting to get it and coming out with versions of apps and or more robust in-app protections for kids. And so hopefully things will only continue to get better.
Yes, I agree with all of that.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Well,
thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, Kristen, for coming on and chatting with me. I really enjoyed it. And I think we created some great value for my listeners.
Awesome.
And we'll have to continue this conversation on another episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That wraps up today's episode. Wherever you are in this world, I hope that you make it a very empowered, informed day for yourself. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to erin@erin-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.